This is The Source on Texas Public Radio, 89.1 FM. I'm David Martin Davies. For many, Facebook is their public face on the internet. It's how they share personal stories, important events, and photos with families and friends. But Facebook is much more than that. It's a platform that will harvest your personal information and then sell it to advertisers. It's also a powerful weapon for spreading misinformation, fake news that's damaging to democracy. So what's your status with Facebook? Are you a power user? Or are you over it? Are you a lurker, always watching but never posting? Do you worry about your private life being put for everyone to look at on the internet through Facebook? How do you protect yourself? Give us a call. We want to hear how you interact with Facebook, if it's been an evolution for you. Give us a call, 210-614-8980. Email us at thesource@tpr.org and tweet at us at tprsource. And again, the number is 210-614-8980. We're joined by Aaron Smith, Associate Director of Research for Internet and Technology at Pew Research Center, and Pamela Rutledge. She is the Director of the Media Psychology Research Center. And welcome both of y'all to The Source. Pamela, why is Facebook such a phenomenon? Why are so many people on it, and what do they get out of it?
Well, Facebook was one of the first social platforms to really allow people to satisfy a basic human need, which is social connection. So it really opened the floodgates to people sharing at all levels of things. Whether or not you now in retrospect view all of that as good is another question. But it was new, it was exciting, it was something we hadn't been able to do before, and I think everyone really jumped into the deep end of the pool.
Aaron Smith, how many people use Facebook?
Quite a lot of them. Our surveys have found that about 2/3 of American adults now say that they use Facebook. That's by a pretty substantial margin, the largest social media platform. And about half of teens tell us that they are Facebook users as well. So in terms of overall usage, definitely still the main game in town.
So if you're one of these people that says, I don't do Facebook, what are you missing out on?
So when we ask people what they get out of social media, they're happy to tell us about all of the bad things and the annoyances that it brings into their lives. But much like Pamela mentioned, the main thing that they tell us they get is connection to the people they care about. That could be the people who live down the street from them, people who are part of their lives that they might have lost track of, or distant friends and family members. So when we consistently ask people what they get from social media platforms, that's very much the first thing that comes out of their mouths is connections to the people and the issues that they care about.
But there's this, I call it the like economy. This is where people, they really want to get after those little clicks of liking and other emojis on their status. And it's like a soap opera, who liked what and when and how. And Pamela Rutledge, do you think there's a thing called a like economy?
Well, there certainly are commercial concerns that are counting and making marketing decisions based upon likes. But I want to support what Aaron was talking about, which is what we see in Facebook is a very unique ability for people to cross previously uncrossable boundaries in terms of human communication, whether that's generational or geographical, or it's the time-space continuum. It allows people to connect in different kinds of ways. So we have grandparents learning what their grandchildren are doing so that they have a greater sense of intimacy when the family gets together. So there's all kinds of things that don't make very good headlines, but that are very fundamentally powerful about Facebook use. That being said, people like to be liked. I mean, that's an inherent biological response. So I think before we get to judgmental about the liking, we have to think about what need and goal is that satisfying, and then sort of parse it out of where's the positive and where's the negative.
Right, but people want social currency. Those likes are social currency for them, and they value those and they pursue them. I mean, don't they, Pamela?
Well, sure, but people pursue social currency of all kinds. So social currency, whether it makes you feel good and then that makes you feel more confident and then you do more things, or whether you're giving it too much power and it's causing you to focus too much on that, those are two separate questions. And that's really an individual differences question or personality question, not a fundamental to the platform question.
All right. Our phone number is 210-614-8980 as we talk about Facebook. Where is Facebook going? How you are the product that Facebook sells, whether or not we have healthy relationships with Facebook and our fellow users. Call in 210-614-8980. Jonathan is on the line. Jonathan, welcome to The Source. You're on the air.
Hi. Thanks for taking my call. One way I've found to kind of reduce Facebook's, I don't know, watch on me is I unfollowed everything, bands, movies, artists, events. I unlike everything. It was kind of a, you know, a task to go and unlike everything, unfollow everything. And I only kept my mom and my dad and my brother, who we all live out of town. So I literally only have four friends on Facebook. And now I feel like, but I still get ads, I still get news thrown at me, and I can choose to make it go away on the screen. But I mean, I just don't want to have to give Facebook any kind of revenue for just signing in to see what my mom's garden looks like. You know what I mean?
Yeah. And so how do you feel about Facebook now? You feel better about it?
I feel better about it from the actions that I've taken, but I don't think that they're going to let up anytime soon. Okay. You know, so it's just something now, you know, apart with the Apple's iOS update where it kind of limits your social networking, you know, tie that in. It's just kind of like maybe a sign of the times, too.
All right, Jonathan, thank you for the call. Aaron Smith at the Pew Research Center. Are there a lot of Jonathans out there who have decided to pare back on their interactions, their relationships on social media?
So I couldn't help but notice that there were a couple of different angles that Jonathan mentioned, and one of them was sort of a concern about the safety of his personal information and not wanting to give out too much of his information to an outside party, whether that's Facebook or another social platform. And in that sense, that view is very widely shared within the population. When we ask people whether or not they trust social platforms to keep their information safe, the vast majority of them tell us that they have serious concerns about what happens to their information once it leaves their presence. In terms of people pruning and maintaining their social presences, that's also not at all uncommon. Depending on how you ask the question, majorities to relatively sizable minorities tell us that they take active steps to, for instance, actively try to influence the content that appears on their news feed within the context of Facebook. And they do a lot of different things. Jonathan mentioned things like actively following or unfollowing certain people, liking specific types of content. So we see sort of a split. The concerns about personal information are fairly universal. Some people are fairly active in terms of managing what they want to see on these platforms. Others less so.
All right. We're talking about Facebook and you. Has Facebook continued to be something that you turn to every day for news and information about the world and about people that you care about? How has that changed over the years? Do you think that Facebook has your best interest at heart? Have you lost trust with the people in charge of Facebook? Give us a call. Tell us what you think. Where do you want this to go? Where do you think Facebook will be in your life in the future? You think it'll always be there, or will something else come along? Will Facebook lose its mojo? Just remember we had MySpace a while ago. What happened to that? Call in with your ideas and what you want us to know. 210-614-8980. 210-614-8980. The Source continues after this one-minute break. This is The Source on Texas Public Radio, 89.1 FM. I'm David Martin Davies. Last week, Facebook announced a new item that they were putting out there, some hardware they called Portal. And with its announcement, they made a lot of promises about protecting people's privacies. But now we're finding out that those promises don't hold up. Facebook is pulling them back and reframing those. And yeah, they will be collecting data through Portal, even though they said they weren't going to. They will be tracking people's calls and other data that they use. And so you realize that when Facebook says they're doing something, maybe they're not. There's a lot of trust issues with Facebook. What about you? How do you feel about trusting Facebook? Give us a call, 210-614-8980. And Melissa is on the line. Hi, Melissa. Welcome to The Source. You're on the air.
Hi there.
Hi.
I would like to say that, first of all, I have really appreciated Facebook. I have friends all around the world, and I love being able to keep in contact with them. I must say that, first of all, when the ads started in Facebook, I didn't appreciate those, but Facebook has made it possible to, you know, to get rid of them or at least, you know, reduce the ads. I appreciate that. Also, though, I did notice that my personal feed was affected during the election with what could only have been Russian interference, which, you know, I really didn't appreciate, getting quick little flashes about negative information about Hillary Clinton. You know, it was kind of interesting. There was never anything negative about Trump. It was always negative about Clinton. So that bothered me. It was really obvious that there was some kind of Russian interference there, and I'm glad that all got exposed.
All right, Melissa, thank you for that. Let me go to Aaron Smith. He's at the Pew Research Center. And should Melissa still be cautious about ads that are out there as we go into midterms?
So I will note that concerns about political information and just sort of political content in general is one of the key annoyances that we see when we survey the public about what they like and dislike on social media. Whether you're a Republican or a Democrat, we don't agree on a lot these days, but we do agree that seeing political ads, getting into political arguments with people you would rather not get into political arguments with, or just generally sort of being reminded about politics in general when you're in the context of social media is something that's really uniquely frustrating to people. And so I think Melissa's concerns about that and her annoyance with seeing that type of information as she's just going about her day on social media, that is one of the unique annoyances that I think social platforms in general bring into people's lives that they are certainly very happy to talk about in the context of our surveys.
So Pamela Rutledge, you're the director of the Media Psychology Research Center. And can you talk a little bit about how political ads on Facebook might have more weight to certain users than they would if they saw that in other contexts, like on television or in a mailer? Because that they received it from someone that they know or a relative, does that political ad now have will gain more attention?
Yes, absolutely. People give much more trust to information that they get, that they perceive to be from friends, family, or even like others. And people have become increasingly suspicious of information that comes, ironically, directly from the source, which is to say, from a brand or a company or a politician. And they're much more trusting of information that they get from someone that lives within their trusted circle. Now, but one thing that we ought to point out and to underscore Aaron's research is that people don't stop to think about that they are paying in their attention to be able to use Facebook. So they are actually, you know, it's like going about their life on Facebook, which is to say, you know, people spend many hours in a week on Facebook without monetary cost. And so the way they're paying is for with their data, with their attention in it. And the more people understand that this really is an exchange in value, the more they can start to make judgments about whether they want to use quote unquote free services at the cost that they're demanding. But yes, this political arena is very powerful, and it's a way that misinformation can be spread because people share what feels right, not what is right.
And Pamela, Melissa, our caller, shared a level of sophistication of acknowledging that there was something happening from an outside influence to her Facebook feed. How typical is that level of sophistication?
Well, so the question is, was this really an instance of outside manipulation, which it might have been, but if you're writing algorithms to shift votes, you don't want to target Melissa with information about someone she's already going to vote for. You want to undermine her confidence in her vote and make her consider something else. So it may have just been a political algorithm written by whoever was, you know, I mean, in this case, I don't want to blame Trump, but since she was mentioning Clinton, the other side would have been Trump, to try and shift her vote to a more conservative point of view. So there's really no way of knowing whether this was algorithm driven through ads or whether this was outside interference. But it's very important that people realize that they are being targeted by algorithms from some source.
But it's not always political parties. Sometimes these are going along racial lines or things that are breaking up people, things like kneeling at football games and Black Lives Matter and trying to exaggerate or demonize, misportray these types of groups. And why does that work so well, Aaron Smith?
Well, I think part of that is the algorithms learn what people respond to. And I think one of the fundamental facts of human nature is that we tend to respond to things that make us laugh or that make us entertained, but we also tend to respond to things that get us riled up, that make us angry. And so in part, this is, as Pamela mentioned, algorithms crunching a lot of numbers, looking at the things that people respond to, and feeding them more of that, regardless of whether it might be the most factual information in the world or whether or not it's ultimately healthy for them as individuals or for us as a society. And so in many cases, what's happening is people are responding with their desires for more of what they want to see, right. And simply being served that by the machine.
Okay, let me go to another caller, Josh. And Josh, welcome to The Source. You're on the air.
Yeah, I was one of the original users of Facebook back when you had to be in college and have a college IT to get on. And I've been off for about 5 years now. And I think that I heard your first caller, and that's really what prompted my call, is that he felt like he was reducing his footprint at Facebook, and that was somehow reducing their revenue. And I think it's important to recognize what exactly it is Facebook is collecting. Yeah, they're collecting your posts, and they're collecting your messages to friends. But really, that's small in comparison to the overall browsing habits of people online. So Facebook is not confined to the website Facebook.com, and anytime you go to a web page where that web page has a Facebook like button, even if it's not visible, which is often the case, that is ended up communicated back to the Facebook server that you, a person who's logged into Facebook on that machine at some other time, is now browsing something that you're interested in.
Right.
Facebook has that information, and that's really where their power comes from.
All right, Josh. So what Josh is telling us, Aaron Smith, we got to go to break in a couple of seconds here, but that Facebook is watching you even when you're not watching them. They're tracking everything you're doing. And so we need people to be aware of that. How aware are they? This seems like you have to be pretty sophisticated to know this stuff.
I'd say this is an instance where Josh is much more sophisticated than the average Facebook user.
And we all got to get there. We have to know how we're being played by Facebook. We're going to take a break. We're going to do pitching, and then we'll come back. We'll continue the conversation about Facebook after this break. The number to call in at that time is 210-614-8980. The Source continues right after this. This is The Source on Texas Public Radio, 89.1 FM. I'm David Martin Davies. Wow, about a week ago, my Facebook account blew up with all these people thinking that their accounts had been hacked or cloned, and they were sending out messages saying, hey, I got another friend request from this person. I think someone hacked my account. And it was a hoax. I never understood what exactly this hoax was, but I know it was and it just seems to be time and time again, things are happening on Facebook where I don't know what's going on, but I just don't want anything to do with it, so I ignore it. But this is scary times when people can come into your email account, into your Facebook account, and just somehow trying to rip you off. What's going on with that? How does this tarnish your overall expectation of what your online experience is going to be? We're talking about that and other issues in regards to Facebook. You can call in 210-614-8980, 210-614-8980. Are you a social outcast if you decide you don't want to do Facebook? And if you do Facebook, what are some healthy habits to make sure that you're not going to be a victim of a scam somehow or just embarrassed? 210-614-8980. Aaron Smith is with us. He's the Associate Director of Research for Internet and Technology at the Pew Research Center. And Pamela Rutledge, she knows what's going on in a lot of people's brains when they go on Facebook. She's the director of the Media Psychology Research Center. Aaron Smith, do you understand what this clone thing was all about, this hacking accusation hoax?
I, I have to say I missed that one. But certainly the notion that the average American is not very dialed in with cybersecurity in general is something that comes through very clearly in our work. People generally don't have a good sense of what best practices are to protect themselves, to protect their personal information, and have a hard time sort of figuring out what the best practices actually are. So in that sense, it's not necessarily surprising that people might be confused about what's happening in the world of cybersecurity, or be able to identify when cybersecurity breaches are legitimate or not.
And when we hear about Data Analytica and other big corporations that are using their Facebook data in evil ways, what does that mean? What are they doing?
So I have to say I'm not quite an expert on the what happens when people hack your account, but certainly the notion that various entities are out there hoping to do harm to your personal information is something that is pretty high up on people's minds. And like Pamela mentioned earlier, the implied bargain of the modern internet is you give sites your information and they let you use their services for free. And when we talk to ordinary users, they certainly have a sense that this is going on. They don't necessarily like it, but they also recognize that this is the way things are currently structured. And so one of the things that they often express frustration about is the fact that they don't have a lot of options to extract themselves from the system. And they feel a certain sense of hopelessness once their information leaves their grasp, that they don't have a lot of control over what other entities are doing with that.
And so Pamela Rutledge at the Media Psychology Research Center, how does this impact people when they have to consider the fact that there are evil interests out there who are trying to hack their information? This kind of makes us all have some sort of psychic defensive crouch. What does that mean?
Right. Yeah. Social media anxiety in a whole new way. One of the things that I think that is important to think about is that when people use social media, we're at our laptop, our desktop, our phone, and it feels very private. And you're also posting things with the expectation that it's going to people that you know. In other words, you have an imagined public or an imagined audience, right? And so it's very hard cognitively to understand the breadth of what it means to have information public, or the access that people have over something that feels, when you're using it, so private. And I want to make one comment about something that, and I think it was Jason who commented on about Facebook tracking your browsing. Facebook is not the only website that tracks your browsing. So really the solution, if there is one, and I mean that small s, not big s, is to get smart about how this technology works, to invest some time in understanding the privacy settings. It all seems so simple. It was new. We jumped in. It's time to pull back and get smart so we can use it positively, productively, and well, and at little risk.
But so if people are going to use Facebook, if they decide they only want to talk to a few members of their family, and they don't want everything spread out all over the world. Just a nice, simple, it's like getting a Sherman tank to go down to the corner store, because you don't need all of that power to do that. There would seem like there would be some nice, simple, elegant ways to connect just a few people without having to get involved with Facebook, Aaron Smith.
Well, and we actually see people doing that. One of the things that is pretty notable in our work is that for all of the new tools that have come online, people aren't abandoning the old tried and true methods either. And so generally what we see is that when we ask people how they interact with different people in their lives, they pick and choose from the tools available to them based on who they're trying to talk to and what they're trying to do. So they might send someone an email, might send someone a text message, might engage via Facebook or another social platform with someone else. But Pamela makes a very good point, which is that, particularly on social media platforms, there's a lot of publicness that is hidden in people's interactions. And I think to the extent that people get, frustrated about particularly, the political information that they see there, it's because of that. They're going on Facebook or another social site to talk to their friends, to catch up on what the people that they care about are up to, and all of a sudden they're being surrounded by political arguments and people getting mad about the election or about Donald Trump or about Hillary Clinton. And that can be a really jarring thing for people. And that's something that crosses both sides of the aisle. So I think that is definitely one of the big challenges that people face as they're trying to navigate these sites.
Okay, let's go to the phones. Got some callers here need to talk. And let's get Benny on the air. And let's see here. Benny, welcome to The Source. You're on the air.
Oh, hello. Thank you for having me. I actually use Facebook to stay connected to my friends. I'm homebound, and I actually allow my friends to get into my life by sharing what's going on with me and have been able to get the kind of support that I need.
All right, Benny, thank you. I'm glad you're able to find a way that Facebook is a benefit to you. So that case, there's a lot of good that comes from having Facebook. People use this to politically organize on both sides. A lot of nonprofits, even Texas Public Radio, we use Facebook to raise money. It's like a superpower. You know, are you going to use it for good or for evil? That's up to you, Pamela Rutledge.
Absolutely. And, you know, there's a long list of ways that things like the Facebook support groups with illness, hunting for old family members. And so it's really a question of, I always say it's mindful social media use. Think about what you're trying to accomplish and then figure out how to do it rather than just sort of wander around and, you know, and leave footprints where you don't mean to. So it can be very powerful, very positive, but you have to understand how to set your privacy settings and how to establish personal boundaries. And it may be that Facebook is not the right tool. There are a lot of kids now moving to Instagram, abandoning Facebook. You know, my nieces and nephews are only on Facebook to find out what us old folks are doing, right? Which is anybody over 30. So there's a lot of options. It just means you have to be intentional.
And so this digital generational gap, Aaron Smith, how's that turning out?
Well, we certainly see very similar data in our surveys as well. To give you a sense of how much this has changed in a short amount of time, as recently as 2015, Facebook was the only social platform that was used by a majority of teenagers. Today, only about half say that they use Facebook, and substantial majorities tell us that they use sites like YouTube or Instagram or Snapchat. So in just the space of a handful of years, the social media environment for teens has become much more diverse than it was as recently as a few years ago.
And no one knows this better than Facebook. They are trying to reinvent themselves. They've reinvented themselves several times, and now they are creating programming. They're trying to become like a TV network of some sort. They have to realize they have to keep up with the times, Aaron.
Yes.
You know, it's like, what are they going to do? You know, it's because people are going to, times keep changing. Here's another caller. Here's David. And David, welcome to The Source. You're on the air.
Yes, David. And I just want to thank you for your program and also let you know, since y'all are doing your membership drive this week, I've been a longtime member, years as far as TPR, and really value y'all's y'all's take on things and the reporting that you do. So appreciate that.
Well, we appreciate
you.
Go ahead.
I wanted to relay an experience I had this morning. I'd gone out to walk my dogs early, came back, and my wife was hysterical. She had posted something on, she had seen a story on Facebook yesterday about the bridge collapse and made a very unwise comment in my mind about how, oh, well, maybe that'll keep out the Hondurans. She wasn't sure where the bridge collapse had occurred, you know, thinking maybe down south of the border, whatever. And so she made this comment. Well, after she made the comment, then overnight there was just all this outpouring of bile and hatred, and she just got all these nasty messages, people saying they were going to come after her, they were going to kill her. They knew the members of our family. They knew our address. And it was just very, very disconcerting and strong enough word. I mean, it was just very, she swears she's going to get off Facebook after this happened because of what's happened. And so I'm not much of a Facebook user, you know, maybe a birthday greeting this here, now, wherever. But I certainly don't say anything political. And she swears she's getting off Facebook, never going to use it again. And I think it's just a matter of possibly using the right, getting more educated, as I think your guests have right. talked about too, that we just need to get smarter on how to utilize it and not certainly, but keep the politics out of it if you don't want to be slammed by other folks.
Okay, David, thank you for the call. And so, Pamela Rutledge, when the horde comes after you on Facebook.
Well, I think that's an unfortunate but cautionary tale about saying something that feels like you're talking to just the people you know, that may or may not have been, you know, in jest, and it going to a broader public that takes offense. And there is this extraordinary reaction right now, especially the country is very divisive. Right. So people seem to be even more negative about how they respond. So, you know, what I would say to this woman is, first of all, learn from this and don't say things that at a broader public are going to be misinterpreted. Delete that post. Call the police and warn them about these things that you've been receiving. And then if you want to keep using Facebook, cancel that account and make a new one.
All right. We're going to take a break. We'll come right back. We're talking about Facebook and you. What happens when things go bad? The number to call in, if you've got a question or comment, 210-614-8980, 210-614-8980. This is The Source on Texas Public Radio. This is The Source on Texas Public Radio, 89.1 FM. I'm David Martin Davies. The number to call in for a conversation about Facebook is 210-614-8980. Joshua is on the line. Hey, Joshua, welcome to The Source. You're on the air.
Hey, thank you so much for taking my call, David. The main point I would like people to take away from my call is that while for some people like Benny, you know, who are homebound, Facebook can do some good, but I think for the vast majority of people, myself included, I think it does more harm than good. I've been off of Facebook for about 2 years now, and I've had a much more enjoyable life experience, I think. I don't worry about silly things like, oh, how many people are going to say happy birthday, or should I tell this person happy birthday? And, you know, getting off of it, I kind of realized all that really matters are the people who are there on your birthday, you know. But it really, I had to get off just to kind of get my perspective back. And, I think right. that's the main point, is I think it does a lot of harm.
Joshua, thank you for that call. Pamela Rutledge, do you think that getting rid of Facebook will improve your quality of life?
Getting rid of Facebook won't improve your quality of life if you don't use an opportunity to gain perspective. I mean, we've seen several different strategies for how to manage social media use, or Facebook use in this case. For Joshua, he's much happier being disconnected. For other people, the people that they're connected to on Facebook are too disparate or hard to track without some mechanism for staying in touch. So it's really a case of, like I said, intentional use, figuring out what you want to use it for, and not allow yourself to being sort of sucked into the sort of empty procrastination. I recommend people keeping a social media journal for a few days, see how they're using social media, see how it makes them feel, so that they can make, you know, conscious judgments about where it's adding to their life and where it's taking away.
And Aaron Smith, how often do people do this? They just take a break, or they temporarily deactivate their account, or should they go in and take a hard look at their privacy settings? What can people do?
So I think one of the big themes of our work that we've seen recently is that use of social media is not one way. We see users constantly telling us that they are updating their settings. About 40% of Facebook users tell us that they've taken a break of several weeks or more over the last year. About a quarter tell us that they have deleted the app from their phone at one point or another. So I think lots of people are struggling with this notion of just how much engagement they should have on social media, how much time they need to spend there, and where that personal balance is for them between the benefits that those platforms can bring in their lives and and the potential costs that they can extract. And I think that differs for every individual, obviously. But for the most part, every time we ask people this question, they generally, a majority of Americans tell us that they get more from these sites than they take. So certainly, Josh's view is not unusual, but for the most part, we see that people, generally appreciate what these tools bring into their lives, even as they have to moderate their usage in various ways to make sure that they're having everything in balance.
And Pamela, let's talk about the echo chamber effect of Facebook, particularly when it comes to people's views on issues, social issues, political issues. We have confirmation bias. We have motivated reasoning where you're just looking for things that are going to help you reach the conclusion that you already have, and that when you are knocking out, unfriending people who disagree with you, you're kind of just going to be not getting a varied diet of information.
Oh, absolutely. We have an inherent tendency to look for things that confirm our own worldview. That's what makes us safe. It makes us feel part of a tribe. So that's a very important cognitive bias. It's not a negative. It's just how the brain works. Recognizing that means Facebook is a really good place to hang out with people who are like you. It is a terrible place to get news. So that's one of those things where education about these social media sites is super important, because people need to understand that if they see a news article on Facebook, they need to be responsible for validating that information, for looking for other sources from NPR, from other legitimate news organizations. And I don't care if you think they're all biased or not, check more than one. But their job is to present the news in the best possible way they can. Their job is not to target you with news that you want to hear.
Aaron Smith, how responsible is Facebook? They don't see themselves as a publisher. How do they just see themselves as an internet company, right?
Well, certainly, like Facebook and a lot of digital platforms, present themselves as arbiters of or sort of neutral platforms for people to post things on rather than publishers. But certainly, Pamela's point that large shares of Americans are getting news on Facebook very much rings true. Over 40% of Americans tell us that they get news on Facebook. That's twice or more any other social platform. In part, that's just because Facebook's really big. In part, that's because a really large share of Facebook users get news on the platform. And in general, when we ask people whether they trust the accuracy of the news that they're getting on these platforms, a majority tell us that they assume that the news they get there is going to be inaccurate. That said, I think there's obviously challenges with figuring out what accurate actually is. But certainly the notion that lots of people are getting news on Facebook and in many cases are a little bit confused about what exactly they're getting there is something that rings very true.
Okay, I got time for one last caller. Javier, welcome to The Source. You're on the air.
Yes, thank you very much for my call. I just wanted to say that many years ago, about 18 or so years ago, a sister-in-law of mine talked me into signing up for Facebook, which was, of course, new at the time. And I was like, okay, I guess so. And I just didn't like what was coming on. And sure, things may have changed recently. But I did not like the questions they were asking. Like, it's like, you don't need to know this. You don't need to know that. All I want to do is I just want to contact somebody. And to me, it's like, like with my mom, she doesn't do anything except email. I'm surprised she even texts messages to me. And I'm happy with that. And what I don't like also is employers that kind of expect you to be on Facebook. And it's like, no, I went I took some classes here in San Antonio College a few years ago. And they said, yeah, look up your name. And I looked up my name and I couldn't believe all the crap that was online and mostly related to Facebook.
All right, Aaron, Javier, thank you so much. Really quickly, Aaron Smith, what's your reaction to Javier's comments?
So I think we've just heard a lot about the universal experience that Americans have on social media throughout all of these calls. It's a mixture of some really great things that get brought into people's lives and some new challenges that they didn't have to deal with before. And I think one of the big themes of our work is that it's not just the citizens of San Antonio who are struggling with these issues. This is something that we're all learning in real time, and that can be a challenging and frustrating process for lots of folks.
And a final thought, Pamela Rutledge, do you think people like Javier need to examine what they want out of social media and then try to get that and leave the rest alone?
Exactly. I think it's really important for people to figure out how they want to contact people, who's on what, you know, platform or media channel, and then figure out what to participate in based upon who they want to stay connected with, because there's no law that says you have to be on Facebook. And if an employer tells you you have to be on Facebook, that's a problem.
All right. Pamela Rutledge with the Media Psychology Research Center, Aaron Smith with the Pew Research Center. This is The Source on Texas Public Radio. Thanks so much for tuning us in.